Hi, hello everyone, and thank you, Zamira, for inviting me. First of all, just wanted to say thank you so much for having me. This is really such a fantastic opportunity to speak for the OU. Over many, many years, anytime I visit Israel, I used to love going to the OU Israel Center to pop in because there's always something going on. And not to be part of that is a real, real plus. So it's my first time, and thank you so much. I was thinking when Zamira asked me to speak about the month of on the Rosh Chodesh Adar Shir, what can I speak about? And I was thinking about Adar and what is there available for me to speak about. I can speak about the month of Adar, a notion of Simcha. We could speak about Moshe Rabbeinu's Yartzei, who he dies in the month of Adar. We could speak about Parsha Zachar and how we read about Amalek and our obligation to eradicate their memory. We could speak about Purim and all the mitzvahs that are involved in that, the reading of the Megillah. There's so many things that we can cover, so what should I cover? And then I thought, I can cover all of those things, because in fact, they all share a similar theme. So I'm going to share the sources with you. I'm going to start with the Gemara in Tainus. The Gemara in Tainus tells us as follows: Mi shenechmes av, mi ma'atim b'simcha. When we enter into the month of Av, we have to decrease our level of happiness. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Berei de Rav Shmuel, Bar Shilat, Nishmei de Rav. Kishim she mi shenechmes av, mi ma'atim b'simcha. Just like when we go into the month of Av, we have to lessen our simcha. Mi shenechmes Adar, marbim b'simcha. So we have Adar on the one hand, which we're supposed to increase our simcha, and Av on the other side of the spectrum, where we're supposed to decrease our simcha. Now, when it comes to the month of Av, this is really easy and this is really obvious, because there's a whole set of rules that come connected with the month of Av that help us to decrease our simcha. So we open up Av, we call those, the opening of Av, we call them the 9 days. We don't take showers, we don't listen to music, we're not having weddings, we don't eat meat, all the different things, we don't drink wine, things that make us happy, we decrease. But in the month of Adar, what do? Nothing. I mean, unless you're in high school and you have Purim prank, right? There's not much that we do, and like dress up days, I don't know, I've been a high school teacher most of my career, and we have to dress up for 2 weeks out of the month, right? There's not a halachic forum for us to increase our simcha. So how do we go about increasing our simcha? So the Chasam Sofer already talks about the fact that in the month of Av, the reason why we decrease our simcha, there's a natural decrease in our simcha in that month, because it's a month of spiritual loss. Why? Because as a people, we engaged in behaviors that severed our relationship with our Kadosh Baruch Hu, severed our relationship with each other in such a way that Hashem had to punish us with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Our temples, two of them, were destroyed in the same month. And so it is a month of spiritual loss. And by definition, that will create an atmosphere of less simcha, because there's all this potential of connection that we could have had in that month if we had the Beis HaMikdash, but we lost it. And that's what happens that month. But the month of Adar, that month is about spiritual gain, because we did something as a nation that created a koach of gaining something spiritually in the month of Adar, and that is inherent and sticks with that month for forever as a koach. But what did we do? I'm sitting outside as it blows me away over here, right? What did we do in the month of Adar that gained us some kind of spirituality? So I brought for you in source number two, the Gemara in Shabbos Peches Samad Aleph, that describes the daf of Gemara is describing Matan Torah. And there it says, the Yitzatzvu B'tachtit Tahar, the Bnei Yisrael, the quoting from Chumash Shmos, the Bnei Yisrael was standing underneath part of the mountain of Har Sinai. Amar Rav Avdini Bar Chama Bar Chasa, Mlamech HaKafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleim Et Ahar Kegigis. Hashem took Har Sinai, held it over us, Amar Lehem Imatam Kablima Torah Mutav. If you accept the Torah now, great. And if not, here you will be buried. And what it sounds like, and again, this is a whole shear, maybe multiple shears in and of itself, but it does sound like we are being forced to accept Torah. You know, like, you better do this or I will drop this mountain on your head. Oh no, that our contractual obligation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu perhaps is a mekach tov, something that we can't rely on because Hashem forces into it. Don't worry, says the Gemara, Amar Rava Afal Pikein, don't worry, Hadur Kablu HaBimei Achashverosh. We willingly accepted Torah in the times of Achashverosh. At the end of the Purim story, Dechtiv Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kfar. We had already accepted the Torah, perhaps out of a state of force. Now, at the times of the Purim story, we accepted it willingly. And if you look at it, where does that pasuk, Kimu v'kiblu, which you quote often in reference to Purim, as a reference to the fact that it's a chag of reaccepting the Torah, it comes at the end of the story. At the end of the story, in source number three, we're in Perek Tet. Perek Tet is really, really the end. The wars have been fought. Esther has proven to be, and Mordecai have proven to be the heroes. Hashem very much has saved Kalisel's life. And we're very, very excited. Why? What is the simcha of this moment? Because, you know, being a Jew, our lives are full of ups and downs. There is constant, you know, roller coastering that we go through in our life. But at the end of the story, we realize that there is one constant in all the up and down that we experience. The one constant that we have is our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't need to be forced into that. When we realize that Hashem has always treated us as a loving father to a child, of course we want to be in that relationship. And so what do we see in the end of Parak Tet? It says, by Kayamim, verse number 3, Asher nachu bahem hayehudim e'abayim, v'hachodesh asher ne'apach lehem yagon l'simchan, that day when we were saved, that was turned from a day that which we could have been mourning because of the destruction of Haman and his followers, instead became l'simcha, a day of simcha, me'evil yom tov, from mourning to a day of yantiv, and therefore, what do? On that day, we have simcha, which we'll discuss what that is. Mishta, which we have the perm suda, mishloach mano, ishla re'ehu, matana le'avyonim, and we take care of those who are in need. So we have all of these mitzvot that were set up in place in order to celebrate the chag, and all those mitzvot are set up to connect us one to the other. They're all very ben adam l'chaveru, interpersonal mitzvot. And then, a few tzvikim later, it says, we accepted this chag on ourselves. We willingly accepted a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to reconnect to our source, to reconnect with our loving Father. And that is the spiritual union, the spiritual koach of the month of Adar, is the koach to reconnect. And throughout this month, which is categorized by Simcha, Mishnech and Adam, Rabbah Mishimcha, what is that Simcha truly about? That Simcha is about our ability to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so what's interesting is that this concept of Simcha, which is a outgrowth of our ability to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is a theme that we can find in so many areas of this month and can explain so many things. The first thing we're going to see it explain is source number 4. The source number 4 is Rashi on the original Gemara. Back in Gemara Tanis, we said, Mishnechnas Adar Marba V'Simcha. What does Rashi say? Mishnechnas Adar, Yimei Nisim Hayuli Yisrael Purim U'Pesach. When we get into Adar, we enter into this time period called Purim and Pesach, which are times of miracles, and therefore we have extra Simcha in those months, and therefore it's clearly an auspicious time to do things, and we're going to be that much more successful. Wait, what? Rashi says Adar is a time of Purim and Pesach. Now, if you're looking at a calendar, before we get too hysterical, Pesach is not in the month of Adar, right? Pesach is the month of Nisan. It's not in this month. So why is Rashi linking Purim and Pesach as a reason for the Simcha of Adar? And by the way, Rashi is not the only source that links Purim and Pesach. We have already in the Gemara in Pesachim in source number 5, which is echoed in the Shulchan Aruch in source number 6, an obligation to start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days in advance. What is 30 days of in advance Pesach? Purim. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch says, Sho'alim b'Hilchos Pesach kodem b'Pesach 30 yom. We have an obligation to start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days in advance. Hagah, says the Ramah, u'minhag l'knot chitim l'chakama aniyim l'tzarach Pesach. And we also have a minhag to start this kimcha de pifcha, or ma'ov chitim, to start collecting, to help our aniyim to get ready for Pesach 30 days in advance, which is Purim. And that's why many people have the minhag, myself included, that at the Purim Su'uda, and hopefully, you know, whatever state of inebriation the people are at the Su'uda, they still remember to bring out a halacha sefer on Hilchos Pesach, and we learn together a halacha about Pesach, because there is an inherent connection. But what is that inherent connection, and how does that fact that Adar being a month of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our true purpose and being part of this bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how does that explain this connection? So Rav Soloveitchik says that happiness, simcha, is actually a prerequisite to freedom. Simcha, which is the niduk that characterizes the month of Adar, is a prerequisite to freedom, the trait that characterizes the month of Nisan. It is a zman geula, it is a time to be redeemed, as where there's so many so much koach of redemption, of all sorts of kinds of redemption, the month of Nisan. A prerequisite for that is simcha. And why is Simcha a prerequisite for freedom? So I wanted to start with, in the world of psychology, before we get to the end of what Rav Soloveitchik says, we see that those two things are connected. So there is a very famous author and professor. His name is Tal Ben-Shachar. He's an Israeli who was an incredibly popular professor in Harvard. He gave the most popular and largest course ever in the history of Harvard. And his course is called Positive Psychology. There's a real, real desire, even in the world of academia, to really engage with what is it that makes us happy. And it became incredibly popular. He now runs his own consultancy agency because he was that successful in doing what he did. And he wrote a series of best-selling novels on how to achieve happiness. And he says as follows, there are four types of behaviors that people engage in. One of them is called nihilism. Things that we do in the moment that we don't enjoy, and we're not going to enjoy them in the future either. So, it's like sitting and crying. I don't know. Being sitting alone in the corner. Nihilism. Things that we're really, really not going to enjoy now or we're not going to enjoy later. Then there's things that we call hedonism. Hedonism is we enjoy them really a lot right now, but in the future, we're going to be really, really upset about it. It's like you're sitting down eating a full pint of ice cream, which I may have once done once or twice, right? Now it's real fun. Later, when you look at it on the scale, not so fun, right? When my students talk about binge watching Netflix, right? You could sit and watch a Netflix hours and 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 hours, and then you look back and say, what did I just do with my entire life? In the moment, hedonism, it's fun. Later, not so fun. Then there is the rat race behaviors, which are the things that we do, which in the moment are not fun at all, but they'll bring future success. It's, you know, putting long hours in at the office and going on a very strict diet or whatever the thing is that in this moment we don't really enjoy, but we know that down the line, it's going to be good for us. And the final quadrant are the things that we call happiness, or that Tal Ben-Shachar calls happiness. Happiness comes from those things that we do, that in the moment we enjoy them, and in the future they also bring us enjoyment. They also bring us happiness. So in the moment, eating a salad, enjoyable if you like salad, and in the future it will be good because it's healthy for you. In the moment, spending time over a coffee break with my friend, enjoyable. In the future, great benefit because I've enhanced my relationship. In the moment, volunteering for Yad Eliezer, very, very enjoyable, and the future has great benefit. And says Tal Ben-Shachar that the things that we do, if we want to have and maximize our happiness in life, we want to maximize our activities that are fall within this happiness quadrant. We're always going to do things that are nihilistic, hedonistic, rat race, that where we put off personal benefit. But if we want to have a life which is experience is happy, we want to maximize the things that make us happy. And he says, what are the shortcuts? How do we shortcut ourselves to happiness? And he actually has a whole book called Shortcuts to Happiness. And he lists things like authenticity is a shortcut to happiness. Doing things that help us get to know our true selves. Who am I really? And I'll add, what does Hashem want from me? He talks about increasing our relationships, working on relating one to another, being more giving, increasing our levels of curiosity and engaging in curiosity, slowing down and taking time to recover. When things get hard, we need time to recover. Those are the things that, activities that fall within those categories, those things will make us happy. And if we increase engagement in those activities, those things will make us happy. And I'm going to suggest that what's the common ground to all of those things, all of those shortcuts that he is suggesting? I'm going to say that what is the unifying factor is what we call self-actualization. When we have potential and we actualize that potential, that is what breeds simcha. So if you're a fan of Ben Shapiro, he says that one of his most inspired was a teacher, I think in fourth grade, who told him the last thing you want to have on your tombstone is he had so much potential, right? He says, no, it's about the happiness and the greatness comes from knowing that I have potential, but how do I make it real? How do I know what Hashem wants from me? We have this concept of Bishvili Nivraha Olam. The world was created for me. I know that as a human being, I was created with Tzalam Elokim, that even though we all have the same stamp of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and yet we're all individual, we're all different, we're all unique, and nobody in this world and nobody in the history of the world can do what I can do, can bring to the world what I bring to the world. And therefore, I have something that I am meant to accomplish. And there is a simcha in knowing what that is. You know, when I, as a teacher of teenagers, I spent a lot of time dealing with people saying, what does Hashem want from me? Who should I be? especially at the age of 18, 19 years old, right? Where should I live? What's my hashkafa? Who should I marry? What's my career, right? We have so much potential, but how do we actualize that potential? And in fact, the fact that self-actualization is something that is the foundational element of happiness is also echoed by the psychology of Abraham Maslow, who is way more famous, I think, than Talvin Shachar, and his development of this, what he calls the hierarchy of needs. You may have heard of this. The hierarchy of needs and the theory behind this is that human beings are motivated by a need to fulfill their needs. There's a hierarchy. So there's a basic. On the basic level, we want to fulfill our physiological needs. We have to eat, we have to sleep, go to the bathroom, things that are physiological. But once we get past that, then we're going to work on developing our sense of security. We want to feel safe. And when we feel safe, then we're going to want to feel like we belong. We want to feel loved. We want to feel like we're in a relationship. And when we feel that, then we're going to develop esteem and we'll have self-esteem. And once all of those levels have been fulfilled, then we're going to want to self-actualize. The top of that pyramid, the greatest marker of success in terms of fulfilling all of our human needs and the greatest goal that we have to get to is self-actualization. So what I want to suggest, and this will be our thesis and our theme for this year, is that the koach inherent in Adar, when we say Mishnah Adar Marbim B'Simcha, what's the Simcha? Is that our ability to actualize our inherent potential. And how do we do that? As we suggested already, what's the spiritual energy of Adar? By connecting to our source. We know and recognize the month of Adar and the events of Adar that Hashem is somebody who is a loving father, who is always there for us, who is always invested in a relationship with us, whether or not we are earning that relationship and that love from him. He is always there. And when we reconnect to that and therefore start to ask ourselves, Hashem, why did you put me here? What am I meant to accomplish? What am I capable of doing? That and answering those questions and answering those questions in a meaningful way, who am I and what can I give to the world? And therefore developing relationships and being authentic, those are the things that breed simcha. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, happiness, that kind of simcha, a self-actualization is a prerequisite for freedom. Because what's freedom? He says, if you look in Sefer Tehillim, I brought this for you in source number 9, and we say this in Hallel, we say in a beautiful song, Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha, we say Hashem, we are your servants, ani avdecha ben amatecha, we are the servant, son of your maidservant, pitachta lamoseirai, we're your servant, and yet, paradoxically, Hashem has removed their chains. That doesn't make any sense. If we're servants, we're chained up. How could we be servants and also have our chains, have had our chains removed? Says Rav Soloveitchik, what's going on? That in the marker of a servant is somebody who can't do what he wants. But an Eved Hashem is not a regular servant. Because an Eved Hashem is doing exactly what he wants. Who's us? Who is the self that we're trying to reveal? Who is the self that we're trying to connect with and actualize? It's our neshama. It's our life's goal and our life's purpose. It's that little inside thing inside of us that our conscience and our good voice that says this is what we should be doing. The neshama in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what it wants. And so by choosing to be an Eved of Hashem, we free ourselves up. And that's the connection between Purim and Pesach. If we spend the month of Adar in self-actualization, in connecting to Hashem and connecting to the Jewish people and achieving that which Hashem wants from us, then by definition, Hashem can bring Geula. And we see this theme of self-actualization run through all the different aspects of the month of Adar. I'll give you examples. Example number one, in most years, not just one, but in most years, the first parsha that we read in the month of Adar is Parshas Truma. And Parshas Truma opens, I brought from source number 10, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to Bnei Yisrael, v'yikhu li truma, me'et kol is asher yedvenu li bo teku et trumati. It starts and opens up the chapter of donations to the Mishkan. Hashem says, all right, everybody, get out your purses. Let's start donating. Let's make a Mishkan. Says the Baal Shem Tov, and he's echoing a question of the Tanna Dvei Eliyahu, who wants to know, why does Parshas Truma follow Parshas Mishpatim? The end of Parshas Mishpatim, with the whole Parshas Mishpatim, it's hard to realize, it's taking place at Ma'amar Har Sinai. We know in Parshas Yisro, which was last week's Parsha, we have the entire experience of Har Sinai and the receiving of the Torah, but Mishpatim only continues that, and all the halakos that we learn there are things that were said at Har Sinai as well. And little known fact, and I love to ask this as a trivia question, the fact that we say Na'aseh V'Nishma at Har Sinai is not recorded in Parshas Yisro. where you would expect it to be recorded, because if we have the experience at Har Sinai, it's actually recorded in Parshas Mishpatim towards the end of the Parsha. We talk about this incredible inspiration that we have of Na'asa V'Nishma. Then comes Parshas Truma, says the Baal Shem Tov, because when you're inspired like that, we just want to listen to Hashem, we want to do, we don't even need to hear what's in it. We're just going to do it. Na'asa, we'll do it first, and Nishma, we'll hear after. It's fine. We're committed, we're signed up to this. Right? That inspiration needs actualization. Inspiration is not real. Though maybe Rabbi Katz will talk about this. This is his, in his book, World Mask, which is on his agenda to be speaking about. He talks about this concept of inspiration is only fake. It helps us see what we're capable of. But until we do something about it, until we make that inspiration real, we haven't accomplished anything. Actualizing the potential of Na'asa V'Nishma is Parshas Truma. You're inspired? Now do something. Make a donation. Get involved with the building of the Mishkan. Let's do something to increase our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how we open actualizing potential with Parshas Truma. We have the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, another symbol of actualizing potential. The Pasuk in Megillas Esther, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zayin, discusses Haman, who is very, very upset because he has been elevated to second in command, and he walks around and Mordechai bothers him, and he is so upset at this one person. He needs to now destroy his entire nation. This is Amalek. We'll get to Amalek in a moment. But what does it say in source number 11? B'chodesh HaRishon hu chodesh Nisan b'shnat shneimesei l'melech Achashverosh. In the month of Nisan, he feel poor. Haman casts lots of goral. He does a lottery. L'snei Haman. And the lot falls on Adar. He chooses the month to destroy the Jews, and he chooses the month that we are about to enter. Says the Gemara in Megillah, source number 12, he peel poor who go row, Tana kevan she nafal poor b'chodesh Adar. When this lot fell out on the month of Adar, samach simcha gedola, Haman was so happy. Amar nafali poor b'yerech, Shemit Bo Moshe. Yes, this is the month that Moshe died. That's amazing, because that must be a bad sign for Bnei Yisrael. Their greatest person of all time died in this month. Bad things happen to Bnei Yisrael and other. If Moshe died, that's great. Except, joke's on you, Haman, because as the Gemara concludes, Lo Haya Yodea, but he didn't realize Shebit, Shebit Shiva Adar, that on the 7th of Adar, mate, true, Moshe died, Ubishiva Adar Nolad, but also Moshe was born on the 7th of Adar. A very good thing happened to Klal Yisrael in the birth of Moshe, which happened in the 7th of Adar. So here Haman was trying to make use of this negative energy of Adar, and in the end, what he didn't realize is that Moshe was born and died on the same day. You know what that tells us? When someone is born and he dies on the same day, when a person comes into this world, they are a child. They have done absolutely nothing. And they continue to do absolutely nothing for a very long time. They are pure, unadulterated potential energy. But when a person dies on that very same day, we can look back at their life and say, and it is a marker, something to call our attention to the fact that they have really maximized their potential. They've really actualized all of their energy, physically and spiritually, in order to be the person they were meant to be. Moshe comes into this world as a child, as having done nothing, and leaves it being the icon of self-actualization, of saying, well, Hashem, what do you want from me? And I'll spend every waking moment of my life in service of you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in doing what you put me in this world to do. So much so we talked about Moshe being Anav Mikol Adam, who has completely sublimated his entire ego the will of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Whatever you want is what I want. Haman, you think you're going to hurt us in that month? A month of the greatest actualization of potential through Moshe? As a lesson, Haman is obviously very much mistaken. We also see that in this month, the big name enemy of ours is Amalek. Now, Amalek is going to represent the opposite end of the spectrum. We know as a law of physics, that for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. This is true in the spiritual world as well. Whatever the spiritual potential is, there has to be the equal opportunity for spiritual decline. Because otherwise, there's no bechira. In order for us to have free choice, the choices on both sides need to be equal. Otherwise, one becomes a more obvious choice than the other, and then we weren't really free to choose. So in order for there to be the spiritual energy and the koach to actualize ourselves, and through actualization and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, having simcha, there has to be the potential for the other side, the downfall of not connecting to our source, not seeing our potential, and not wanting to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Amalek comes to represent. Amalek, Rav Hirsch calls Amalek, I'll just read to you what he says, he has a great line. He calls Amalek the enemy of human happiness and divine kingship on earth. He uses that's the lesson of happiness. That Amalek is that in this world and belief and connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Well, Rav Soloveitchik refers to Amalek as the human form of the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara, actually, in Brachos, which I brought for you in source number 13, says, Amar Rav, Yetzer Hara dome lezvuv. The Yetzer Hara is like a fly. The Yoshev bein shnei mistachei halev, which will always sit opening between the heart. Between the hearts, being between the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, says the Kli Yakar in verse number 14. I brought you a Gemara that talks about the Yetzer. Says the Kli Yakar, as did what we said already with Soloveitchik and Rav Hirsch and all the others, that Amalek comes to represent this concept of human form of the Yetzer Hara that is Doma Lezuv. What's a fly? A fly is something super annoying that only will come and attack when there's something that is open. If you look at verse number 14, it says, "The Yalkut Masek Shamalek Domel Zvuv Shahayetah Hara Him Shiluhu Lizvuv." The Yetzer Hara is like a flash, a koach piv chalush va'asot nekef the basar. It is very incapable of making any kind of hole in our skin that is shalim. If it's whole skin, if something that is whole, the flash not doing ach. The makom shahazvuv motzei eizo morsa. But if the zvuv, the fly, finds a wound, an opening, or shachin, or some kind of boil, something that is open, it's not only needs to be a little bit open. Sham yirbatz v'yarchiv ha'partza, but he will get himself into that opening and make it fester and make it really, really open up and make it and infect it. That's what Amalek does. Amalek, we never say Amalek attacks us when we are shalim with Hashem, but when we have a little opening, when we're not shalim, when we're not totally one with one another, and we're not shalim with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, oh man, well, we see in Parshas B'Shalach 2 weeks ago, in Parshas B'Shalach, we just left Mitzrayim, and the entire parsha is about Hashem proving to Bnei Israel his ability to take care of them. They're slaves, they're scared, there's tons of anxiety. Hashem says, don't worry, I'm going to help you through this anxious period by letting you know what I'm capable of. Until we get to the end of the parsha, and Bnei Israel don't have water in the parsha. They were already traveling for 3 days, there's no water, and then they get to Mara and the water is bitter. Hashem says, I can do the water thing. So we are now towards the end of the parsha where they what Hashem is capable of, and again, there's no water, and now they freak out, and this time Hashem's not happy, because you should know already, you should trust in the Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's capable of taking care. And if you know the story, they fight with Moshe, Moshe goes ahead and is told to hit a rock, this is the time where he's allowed to hit the rock, he hits the rock, and water comes out. But what does the prophet tell us in verse number 15? Vayikra shem ha-makom ma-meriva. This place is called Masa u-meriva. Al-riv b'nei Israel. It is called a meriva for the fight that b'nei Israel have. One another. We are Nasa Temet Hashem, and not only that, but it's called Masa because they tested a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They were not showing the Kadosh Baruch Hu either. Leimor Hayesh Hashem Bekabenu in the Ayin. And what is the very next thing that happens immediately following is we have the attack of Amalek. Amalek comes and crashes the party. He says, "Oh, you're not sure if Hashem's capable? Here I am. You've opened a little tiny opening," and that's where Amalek comes and festers. And comes in and engages. And we know that he comes in and attacks the Nechash Shalim, those who are weak among us. I wasn't sure about all of Klal Yisrael. Nobody had any kind of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and love for one another. But who are weak among us, who didn't want to have that connection, who didn't want to have the simcha that is an outgrowth of our connection with our original source, our true source, and our neshama, and our goal in life. And Amalek comes and engages. And what happens, says the end of that story, when we beat Amalek, Hashem says, you need to write this down. This has to be part of your national consciousness and memory, that you always have to eradicate the memory of Amalek. So, source number 16, by Yomar Hashem al Moshe, Ketov Zot Zikaron. Write this down as a remembrance of the Sefer in a book. V'sim ba'azne Yehoshua Ki, and make sure Yeshua remembers because he's going to take over. Ki machol emcha et zecher Amalek. I will wipe out the memory of Amalek. Mitachas Hashemayim. It will never remember them ever again. Vayomer. Why? Ki yad al keska. Because the hand of Hashem is on his throne. Melchama la Hashem ba'amalek midor dor. And therefore there is a war of Hashem with Amalek in all generations. very weird phrase. Kiyad al kaiska. What does that even mean? Says of Soloveitchik, if you look at the word kais, it's short for kisei. And ka is short for the shame of Hashem, which is the yud hey, vav hey. And so we only have the yud and the hey. We're missing the last two letters of vav hey. Hashem's throne is short, is truncated, and Hashem's name is truncated to represent the fact that when Amalek exists in the world, or the koach of Amalek, which is there, asher karcha baderech, he is, Rav Leitchik calls him the leftover tohu vavohu. When the world was created, before the world was created, there was tohu vavohu, total chaos. And Hashem moved that chaos aside to create the world, but he left a little bit of it around in the form of Amalek. And that is the chaos that is rendered by sin. So Amalek is any place we allow Hashem in because we want to sin, because we don't want to connect with our neshama, and we don't want to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we don't want to connect with what our goal is in being here, and this notion of Bishvili Nivra HaOlam. That's where sin seeps in. That's when we do things wrong, and that's when we are upset with ourselves because we've done the wrong thing, and we don't feel connected to our ultimate purpose. Amalek comes to represent, and our obligation to give Kis, the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a full kisei, a full throne, and give Hashem his name, and the only way we can do that is by eradicating Amalek. So Amalek is, of course, going to show up in the month of Adar, a month in which we can actualize our potential, fulfill our purpose in this world. He's going to come and try to get us to not. He's going to come and try to get us to be confused. And by the way, that is a potential in Purim as well, because it's a day that is full of opportunity to do things Amalek-like, where we can get drunk and make a mess and be too silly and forget the fact that this day is about Torah and learning and growth. You'll have that Amalek koach that's inherent in the day unless we take it and use it and connect with it, the simcha that is supposed to be the growth of Purim. Now, interestingly, as we're listing all the different ways in which we see Adar is a month of self-actualization, it's interesting to note that Amalek, who is our big enemy, is always fought with by the children of, not all of the children of Yaakov, but that's for the children of Rachel, right? Yeshua is the one who goes ahead and he fights with Amalek in Parshas Beshalach. We have Shaul, the first king of Yisrael, who's from Shevet Binyamin, a child of Rachel, fights Amalek. And of course, in our Esther story, we have Esther and Mordecai, also from Shevet Binyamin. Right? Why? Why is it that the children of Rachel are specifically inclined towards disposing of Amalek? Why are they the antithesis? Why are they the, I guess Amalek's the anti-hero, they're the hero, right? Why are they opposite? So I heard, I saw a beautiful idea from Dr. Ariella Agate, who is a fellow at Matan, and she suggested as follows. In source number 17, in Parshas Toldos, when Yaakov comes to get the bracha of Father, it says, Vayigash Yaakov el Yitzchak Aviv. Yaakov comes to Yitzchak, the Mushehu, and Yitzchak feels in Yaakov. You remember Yitzchak couldn't see, and Yaakov's wearing the clothes of Esav. And Yitzchak is now confused, and he says, "Vayomer Hakol Kol Yaakov." I hear the voice of Yaakov. V'hayidayim yidei Esav. V'odor I feel the hands of Esav. And to suggest not just a statement of Yitzchak's experience in this moment. What do I hear and what do I feel and what do I hear? She says, but this is actually encapsulates the kochos inherent in Esav, whose spiritual descendant is Amalek. Their kolach is yad, using their hands. Is our koach is kol, and that kol finds itself, its manifestation, the ability to use our voice or not use our voice, finds itself manifested in Rachel and her children. Why? What do we know with Rachel? Rachel is supposed to marry Yaakov, and then she sees Leah goes ahead and is going to be given away, and she can very easily undermine, because Yaakov has given her a series of codes, right, signs, so that to make sure that she doesn't get tricked, and she says, no. To use my voice here to not speak up in protest of this, but rather give over to my sister in such a way, as it would seem, Leah doesn't ever really know that Rachel gave over the signs to her, and doesn't give over her husband to her. In fact, she feels that Rachel enjoying the marriage is not being so nice. She was there first, also a shira unto itself. And what do we see so? At the end of, after she's already passed away, and we see this in source number 18 in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, which we read on Rosh Hashanah, as the Haftarah on the second day, Kol Amar Hashem, what do we see about Rachel? Kol Berama Nishma, we hear a kol that is on high. Nehi B'chi Tamarim, it's a bitter cry. Rachel Mavaka Abaneha, we have Rachel crying. As we say, Mama Rachel, cry for us again. Rachel uses her kol to daven on behalf of Bnei Yisrael, and Hashem does ultimately listen to that call. And he does say, "Veshavu vanim l'gvulan, yesh shal l'pula seich." There is going to be an hour for your call, use of your call. And there's a medrash of l'mshu there, but essentially Rachel gains our redemption by the proper use of her call. We see that with Shaul as well. Shaul becoming the first king of Klal Yisrael is anointed to be king. And then when he comes home, his family's like, "Hey, where have you been?" He said, "Oh, well, I went, I saw Shmuel and Avi." And they said, "Well, what did he say?" And he doesn't say, "Oh, Shmuel told me I'm going to be king." That could have bragged, been like, "By the way, guys, I'm the next king." No, he says nothing. He says, "Oh, you know, peace." And then I brought you in source number 19. When they go ahead and all Klal Yisrael are gathered and they're trying to pick the king, and they do lots, and they pick up Binyamin, and they pick his name. They do this lottery and they pick up Shaul's name, and they look for Shaul to say, "Okay, let's anoint you." They can't find him. They ask Hashem again, "Where is this man?" Shaul doesn't use his call. He's very, very humble, and he hides. He doesn't need to, you know, tell everyone and misuse his call to brag. And in fact, Shaul is somebody who very mistakenly doesn't wipe out Amalek. I guess our whole month would have looked very different if he had. And how do we know? How does Shmuel know he's messed up? Look in verse number 20. "V'yomer Shmuel meh kol hatzon azeb aznai." When he shows up at the war camp and he sees who was just sent to wipe out Amalek. And what does he hear? A kol, but it's not Shaul's. He hears the kol of the animals of Amalek, and he realizes Shaul hasn't fulfilled his purpose. And fast forward to our story of the Megillah, where we have Esther being asked by Mordechai to go ahead and save Klal Yisrael. It says, Esther says to Mordechai in verse number 21, she says, "I can't go to Achashverosh to save Yisrael. If I go and he doesn't call me, he's going to kill me." And what does Mordechai say? "Esther, oh, you think you can escape by being quiet? I don't think so. That you're quiet. Hashem will save Bnei Yisrael anyways, but you, you're going to be safe because you've kept quiet." And what does Esther do? "You're right, I need to use my voice. Go gather the Jews, let's fast." And she puts into motion a practice whereby she does actually use her voice and she saves the Jews. So we have this notion of the kol, this use of our voice in saving Klal Yisrael. And in fact, if you look in the war with Amalek, it's true. Moshe sends Yoshua to go save Bnei Yisrael. And true, the Yadayim are factor prominently where Moshe's hands are, what are they, hands up, what are they doing? They're up in prayer. They're using his call. They're a calling of attention. Bnei Yisrael, you think it's the hands. You think that's a real kalach? No. This only works, the hands being up only works if I'm also using my call. If I'm also using the power of not the power to combat the power of Esav. It's not the Yadayim, it's our kol. What does that have to do with anything? We're talking about self-actualization and Amalek and the children of Rachel. Because, says Gemara in source number 22, Gemara in Shabbos, when we derive Nachman bar Yitzchak name in Mazel Yisrael, we have this concept, there's no Mazel Yisrael. What does that mean, there's no Mazel Yisrael? The Gemara continues, I didn't bring it for you here, but there's a story about, well, we learned this concept, Ein Mazel Yisrael, we learned from Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak. What happened to him? His mother was told that the astrologer saw in the stars that he was going to be a thief. And she said, no, I don't want my son to be a thief. And she made him cover his head, you know, the kippah, before they had kippahs, I guess. As long as his head remained covered, he didn't steal. One day, his head covering fell off, and he was sitting under a date tree that didn't belong to him. He climbed up and he stole. And the Gemara said, "You see? You know, as long as there is," and I got this through from Steinfeld, even though we have a specific nature, a certain mazel, true in that we expect from other people, when it comes to Yisrael, what do we have? We have the ability to change our nature, right? To achieve things that we didn't think that we could achieve, to fulfill that purpose and to go beyond what we think is capable and go beyond what Amalek expects from us and go beyond that, you know, and recover from that opening that we have created by not having Shalom, by not having Shlemos with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, by using our kol, by David. So far we have said that the kolach inherent in Adar is Simcha. Which is Simcha, reconnecting to Kadosh Baruch Hu, reconnecting to our true purpose. That gives us Simcha. And even if that something that is incredibly difficult, We can use our kol. This is the month of tefillah. I know many people who have, many friends of mine have the minhag to wake up on that vesikin and daven early, that one day of the year, because we have this kolach of tefillah. And this month to overcome those things that we find that are binding. In fact, we have this concept in tefillah when we say Hashem sefasai tiftach. Asaf is a boundary, and we say Hashem, help us break down our boundaries so that we can connect to you. That kolach is part and parcel of what we find in this month of Adar. And what's interesting is that I find, especially as a seminary teacher, that this time of the year, there's a real slump. You know, you would think, you know, the whole year is on a high. It's not true. The beginning of the year, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, of course, is a high. They're not rhyme, and then that carries into Hanukkah, because Hanukkah is connected as a Yom, as a Manchuva to the beginning. And so you have your commitments that you've made, and you hold on to them. And you get to this point, in Chagim, since Hanukkah, and we're really, really far away, except that we know that Purim, Yom Kippur, which is where the inspiration starts, is only a Yom Kippurim, a day that's like Purim, and that is a day of total and complete spirituality. There's nothing physical about it. But Purim, higher spiritual level, our ability to connect is even greater on Purim than it is in Yom Kippur, because we have to take the spiritual, the physical, we take the drinking and the eating and those things, and we elevate them, right? We raise them higher, and says Rabbi Yoel Kito, if one attains holiness through affliction and another attains holiness through indulgence, who is greater of the two? And maybe says the one who attains holiness through indulgence is greater. The spirituality of Purim is actually even greater than the spirituality of Yom Kippur itself. So in essence, and in review, yes, I'm drying you up. So in essence, and in review, the simple of this month, we could say, the essence of this month comes from our ability to reveal our true selves and revealing our true source, right? When we actualize something, we're taking potential inside of us, and then we are revealing it. And that is what we do in all the different aspects of this month. This month, the mazel, the gim, things that you can't see, if you're just looking at the water, right? Unless you're at a very shallow fountain, they're beneath the surface. If you want to find the fish, you're going to have to look down deep underneath. Right? We've got Moshe, who, it's interesting that Parsha Zachar is almost always read, now again, not this year, but at the same time as Parsha Tetzaveh. We have the eradication of Amalek at the same time that we read a Parsha, the only Parsha in Moshe's lifetime where Moshe's name does not appear. He is concealed. Just the same way Amalek's hatred often throughout generations is concealed, but doesn't mean it's not there. The same way in the Megillah, Hashem's name never appears once. He is concealed. But just because something's concealed does not mean it's not there. It's interesting that in trying to reveal the truth and uncovering that which is hidden, is marks for us in a very frightening way an anniversary that we'd like to forget, which is a year ago, this month is the time where coronavirus became part of the consciousness of our nation for sure. It most certainly created Adar in terms of being in the world. In fact, they are discovering in the world of science that it predates even the Wuhan breakout. But it wasn't until Purim Sudas all across Jewish communities that suddenly coronavirus was a real serious thing that we knew of people suffering from, that we saw lockdowns happening in real life, that we saw children not going to school, that we saw people getting sick, that we started wearing. And I, you know, thought long and hard about, and we've all thought long and hard, and I've heard plenty of people talk about, what is it that Hashem is trying to communicate to us? And I think that this search for what coronavirus is meant to teach us. I actually myself had coronavirus a few weeks ago, and I had it, and none of my family got it, just me. And my immediate reaction was, wow, is Hashem's hashgacha so precise? You know, kind of like that power moment where Hashem can come after one person, not anybody else. And that was my first reaction. But there's so many, obviously so many messages. But Yishai Ribo wrote a fantastic song, if you're not familiar with it. It's called Keter Melucha, and I brought it for you here in source number 25. He's such a paitan. He's such a great poet, Yishai Ribo. And he says, and he really can remember the dates based on how he writes. Bein Truma L'Titzaveh, Yom Huledek Tzat Mishuneh, Hakol Ragil Kam Lechora, Bameka Halva Ahava. Right, things were pretty normal. But then came the Purim Simcha. Now we start to ask, you know, what are the results going to be as everyone starts to get tested? And then following Purim, between Kitisa and Vayakel, the whole world stopped together. We no longer had shuls, we no longer had school, v'hishta tik, v'hishta ger, everything became quiet and close. Yishmael, Adon, v'Yisrael, it didn't matter what nation you were from, it was all closed. Ain't ish be'ir basadeh, no one was in mulki v'hitnahel. I remember going back on my porch and saying, there's nobody, it's just quiet. Nobody at that time was in violation of segar, no one was walking out. Migdal Babel, shuv Migdal Babel, where Hashem split us all up in the original, since the original seven languages, once again, we've been dispersed and displaced. And that's what happens with the onset of coronavirus. And I, interesting, that quiet, that stillness, that masking took place at the time of Adar. And why? Because I think that one of perhaps the messages of this coronavirus for us is that coronavirus, just like what we've been talking about, is something that is concealed. Something that we cannot see with the naked eye, and yet we know without a question that it is there, right? We know that it is there, and it's something that we have to look for, something we have to see. When I tested for coronavirus, I didn't think I had it. The same with all my students, almost all of my students, with five exceptions, had coronavirus, and we still can't figure out those five and how they haven't yet caught it, because everybody else has had it. We have all these people catching it, but nobody thought that they had it. And you know why it spread so fast, because we always think, well, it's just a cold, it's just a headache, it's just this, is just that, if you don't have your classic symptoms, you know, it's something that is can be concealed until we decide to look for it. And I think that perhaps Hashem is giving us an opportunity. I know that we can look at it, and of course there's been very, very sad events as a result of coronavirus, and we've all, I'm sure, have shared in at the very least national loss, if not personal loss, through this. But I think there's also an opportunity to be taken in the time period of coronavirus, where, you know, I've seen with my students that the coronavirus has brought out in us is the major breakdown between our locus of control and people who have been dealing well, people and who generally deal well with mental health, because they have what we call an internal locus of control. And they recognize that when something goes awry outside of them, they have to look internally. They need to surrender control, to say, there's something that's a greater power than me, and it has a plan, and the plan is good. We call Hashem Gomel Chassid, until we surrender that control, and we can then do something with the fact that we're not in control, and do something positive by giving something good to the world, putting positivity into the world, then we'll do well. And those people who are not doing well, we have an external locus of control by saying, we're a victim, and this is all happened to me, and it's all terrible. Hashem gave us this opportunity to mask up, to say, you know what? I don't need to know what everyone else thinks of me and what everyone else expects of me. Who am I? What is my true self? What is my purpose? And what does my relationship look like with the Kodesh Baruch Hu when there's no other distraction and nothing else to do, and I'm in my house and there's nowhere for me to go? Now, what do? Can I have simcha despite that? Or do we use this as an opportunity for discord, for hate, for protest, for being maskers and anti-maskers and vaxxers and anti-vaxxers and misrepresenting Judaism to the world? We can. And when we do that, when we choose the Amalek path and we make tetza and we make openings, then the dormant hatred of Amalek, which we thought was concealed, opens up. And we've been seeing a whole lot of that in this time period as well. But maybe we have an opportunity through our masks and being hidden and being in the quiet and being in the flow to connect with what Talben Shachar talks about, of being authentic, of discovering who my true self is, of giving to other people. There's so many people who are in need for us to give, and we don't have to give much more than our time and our ears. And that in itself is enough. And if, you know, doing so, we can reconnect with our source. And that's what Isha Riva says in the highlight of the song. He says, "Ma tarot session of Inmiza." What do you want us to understand? And again, I'm not using him as a metaphorist, but I think he just says it so well. How can we become one? Recognize that all this comes from you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that you want us to surrender our sense of control. Everyone's been engaging in some speculation this week. Is school opening? Is it not opening? Are stores opening or not opening? And I don't need to know, because when there's something to know, I'll find out. We have a rule. The only thing that we can possibly know in the world is that I don't know anything. That's the one sure thing that we know, is that we don't know. I think it's a quote from Socrates. So if we surrender that, and our need to control and our need to know what's going to be, and know that, well, this is in my space of saying, well, what can I do with this? How can I get more in touch with myself to be more authentic, to be giving, to engage in my curiosity, we now can slow down and we give ourselves time to recover. That's what coronavirus really is all about. And if we use this time to maximize our individual potential and our national potential, something that I'm seeing with my students who, in the middle of this lockdown, have not been able to go anywhere, but what are they doing? They're sitting in the Beit Midrash and they're learning day in and day out and really maximizing their spiritual. If we can do that on the individual level and we can do that on the national level, then Hashem will maximize and actualize the potential of the world with the coming of Mashiach. Maybe speedily in our days, and we will come from the happiness that is inherent in the month of Adar into the freedom that is inherent in the month of Nisan. I wish you all much simcha in this month and a Gula Shleima in the coming one.